Our two talks this morning were on our vision for the women Jesus is giving us, right? These two talks are going to be on our vision specifically for our churches. So here's our big dream, that our churches would be places where men are men and women are women, and both are valued and all are mobilized to partner together for gospel advance. That's our dream. That they would be the super bright, life-giving cities on a hill where the beauty of the gospel is shown off by our equality being embraced and celebrated and our distinction being embraced and celebrated. So I'm going to do some theological vision on that for 18, 20 minutes, and then Patty is going to do the feel of what does that feel like in the life of the church. All right, 60 miles straight northwest of this city is an InterVarsity campground called Toanipi. Nobody knows what those names mean, but it's this beautiful joint, and it's got this big lake right in the middle of their property. One year, I went up there with my two young sons in the middle of the summer. Now, if you don't know about summertime in New England, this is how it works. We get these 4 months of suicide watch cold. You know what that is? And everything is windy and bitter and gray, and there's rock salt everywhere. Even Farrell would get depressed if he lived around here in the summer, in the wintertime. But then the summer breaks in. Boom. It's about 2 weeks away. You know Gandalf coming down the hill on the fifth day at dawn? This is the summer, Gandalf, come to rescue us. We get these 4 months, clam bakes, pool parties, cherry slush from Richie's, beach days in the Atlantic Ocean, and these, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, super violent thunderstorms. 1 minute, everything is as dry as an Amish wedding, and then boom, you are soaked head to toe. This is what it's like. Super dry to super wet. You feel that? When we were up there, one of those storms dropped on us out of nowhere. The Truman Show is free on Netflix right now. So you know in the Truman Show when the director's trying to kill Jim Carrey, he's on the sailboat. You're going to have to kill me. Well, this is what happened right there that day. Thunder was rolling. There was waves on this lake. And I remember standing on the shore and thinking to myself, glory. God is showing off his glory in this moment. Don't miss it, Matt. Don't miss it. But then a couple years later, I went back up, this time totally by myself in the middle of October for a personal retreat day. I did nothing but drink hot chocolate, eat popcorn, and read the Bible. That was it for 2 days. I got up wicked early in the morning, and I canoed out to the center of this lake. The sky was Monet blue. You spun a 360-degree turn like this in the middle of our foliage season. It was breathtaking. Orange, gold, red, yellow. There was not a ripple on this lake. There was not a sound in the woods. And I remember thinking, don't tip over because they're going to find your body in like 3 weeks because there's nobody on this campground right now. And glory. God is showing off his glory as creator in this moment. Don't miss it, Matt. Now, here's a question that's not going to make any sense, but I want you to hear the question. Which of those two glories was better? So the question totally misses the point, right? Neither was better or worse. It wasn't a competition. Both of them showed off the glory of God, just in their own ways. And whenever you encounter two distinct glories like that, you don't rank them. You don't pit them up against each other. You don't elevate one in order to demean the other. What do? You receive and you revel in both of them. That is how we want you to think about masculinity and femininity in this world, and especially in your churches. That there is equality among men and women, but there is not sameness, and that lack of sameness does not intimate superiority or inferiority. Both are infused with glory. And God wants both on display, even in the life of the church. Okay, every generation of Jesus' church is faced with these doctrines that really test their mettle, right? Will we syncretize and compromise and apostatize, or will we hold to orthodoxy? For Athanasius' generation, it was the doctrine of the divinity of Christ. For Augustine's generation, it was the doctrine of sin. Just how bad are we? For Luther, it was the doctrine of justification by faith. How are we saved? For Jesus' church right now, it is totally, whether we have gluten-free bread at communion time or not, or whether a pastor should tuck in his shirt or not, that's another battle. I made my call in that one. Or whether the hymns should be rearranged or not. Who's in the camp of we should totally be rearranging the hymns to bring them up to contemporary style? Who's in the camp of if my worship leader does that again, I'm putting him in the figure four leg lock until he promises never to do it again? No. It's the doctrine of man. That's one of them. Specifically, the doctrine of sexuality, explosive. And specifically, the doctrine that God created us male and female, equal in dignity and worth, but distinct in calling and glory. Okay, let's talk about the doctrine together. When the Pharisees tried to punk Jesus with a question about divorce, he answered with some words that are crucial for us. He said to them, "From the beginning, it was not so." In other words, it was a principle of Christ's that if you want to know about God's intentions for us, go back to the beginning. This is Jesus talking, where those intentions were put on full and beautiful display. All right, so our first touchstone text in this section is Genesis 1. I'll just give you these three parallel phrases. So God created man. Oh, is it up there? Okay, it's not up there. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. All right, let's just do some simple exposition together. Does everybody in the room feel the equality in those verses? Every member of our race bears the Imago Dei. Every human life, male or female, in the womb or out of the womb, perfectly healthy or terribly sick, rich or poor, wicked smart or 550 on the SAT, 6'3", 5'2", Celtics fan, Lakers fan. I'm serious about this doctrine. All equal in dignity and value and worth. Okay, I know that you know this, but let it be clearly heralded from the front of every one of our churches that every woman that walks in the doors of your church is of breathtaking and inestimable value. And that value is not rooted in her performance or in her intellect or in her accomplishments or in her zip code or in her looks or in her relation to any man. It is rooted in who she is before God. Equality. Does everyone in the room also feel unmistakably the distinction in these words? Male and female from the beginning. God did not create androgynous beings. This is not Abercrombie and Fitch or iRobot where you can't tell the difference. He did not create persons. He created men and women. He bifurcated the sexes. It's a technical term for it. Now, in this text, the biological distinction is what is emphasized because it's connecting with the command, the mandate to be fruitful and to multiply. So God wrote distinction in our bodies. Our DNA is distinct. XY for some of us, XX for others. Dos Equis, that's some of you in this room. Our sexual organs are distinct. Our hair, our hands, our hips, they are distinct. And all of that distinction is beautiful. It's meaningful. It's purposeful. God declared it good. But anatomy is just the beginning of this. As you keep reading through the text in Genesis, you see all these other distinctions in Genesis 2. There is a distinction in the timing of creation. He did not create man and woman simultaneously at the same time. Man was created first, and then woman next. We call that the creation order. There is distinction in the raw materials that God uses. Man is created from the dirt of the ground. Woman is fashioned from the rib from the man's side, distinct. There is a distinction in their naming. God names the man Adam, and that name sticks for the race. Man names the woman Isha. We could keep going. I only have 18 minutes. We could keep going and see dozens of other distinctions, explicit and implicit, in the story of God's creation of us. And what we do in Kalos Track is we get in this room right back here. There's this big wall that has the whiteboard paint on it. And we start in the top corner, and we fill it all the way up to the bottom corner, and we say, let's look at the text. You tell me all the distinctions that you see. And then at the end of that conversation, we say, okay, what is going on there? And together we have an aha moment when we realize that everything on this board, everything in the text of Scripture, drives unmistakably to a distinction in our callings. Now, here's how we summarize this. You may have different words, but hear this with me. We're finished and we go, you know what it looks like? It looks like man was created to take responsibility and to bleed and to sweat for all that God puts in his care. We call that headship, and it intimates a holy and humble authority. And there is glory there. And then we go, and it looks like the woman was made to come alongside the man in this mission that God has put before them and to help with all of her brilliance and all of her strength and all of her capacity and all of her intelligence and all of her energy. And we call that submission. And it intimates holy and humble partnership. And then we go, and there is glory there. Now, which glory is better? So there's that nonsensical question again, right? We're supposed to see both and go, whoa, don't miss it. Each of these displays so much about the glory of God. Okay, now as Americans, we hear all that, and what do? We freak out. You ever seen somebody on the Whole 30 diet and they hit day 11? Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is just in their dreams. They are irritable. If you even like, hey man, I had that new Snickers bar, they are like on you. Don't talk to me about sugar right now. You ever talk to somebody who's into the Enneagram stuff and you like misnumber them? Oh my head. Yeah, you're a 7, right? Fist fight, I'm a 3. How dare you get that wrong? We lose it on this doctrine. We can be honest. We will take equality. We will not have distinction. One of my most loved younger men in the history of the church is Nick. He stands up here skinny as a pole, and he rocks on his bass in worship to Jesus. We married, he and Christine, up in the middle of New Hampshire, and I proceeded over the ceremony. And in the ceremony, I just said the most simple gospel words about their unique callings in this union that God was giving them. And there was this woman in the third row, and as soon as I started, she bristled at me, and then she squinted at me, and her head started doing this, and her arms just went exactly like this. And she stared me down for the next 5 straight minutes. And I was like, I'm getting a blade right in this kidney right here, and I'm going down in front of this whole place in my tux. That's us. That's America. We bristle. We squint. We shake our head. We close ourselves off to this truth. We will not have it. You know who did not respond this way to this doctrine? It was the first man and the first woman. God brings the woman to the man. He lights up like Vegas at midnight. And immediately he recognizes equality and distinction, that she is a perfect fit for him. And what does his heart do? It leaps. And implicit is, what does her heart do? It leaps right back. And neither of them thinks to bristle. They happily receive who God has made them to be, what God has called them to. And what they do is they don't close their arms. They fall into each other's arms in unity. And then they lock arms together on mission. That is the spirit that's supposed to mark not only our marriages, but our churches. All right, now, pastors, I do not mean that women are going to be falling into your arms on Sunday mornings, okay? TBH, that would be a problem if that was happening. I mean that we should be working to build church cultures where men embrace their masculine glory and the women do not bristle at them for it, but they love them for it. And where women embrace their feminine glory and the men do not demean them for it. They love them for it. This is the culture that God was forging in the garden, and this is the culture that he is forging in the church through the gospel. All right, now, I know that sometimes people hear that and they go, false. What was true in the garden is not true in the gospel or in the church. Christ has freed us from all this distinction talk. And he's flattened everything out. And we should banish the words and the concepts of masculinity and femininity from our vocab. I say false right back, because it is the unmistakably clear teaching of the New Testament that in the gospel, God has not abandoned his creative intentions for men and for women, but he has redeemed them. And both equality and distinction are still to mark our life together. Is there equality in the gospel? Come on, you're safe to go. Yes, man, there is. Like, I don't know which one it was. Is there? Okay. I could give you 20 texts. Here's one. The Apostle Paul famously, beautifully said that in the gospel, there is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither slave nor free. There is no male and female. All right, now every egalitarian has this verse tatted somewhere on their upper body, right? Maybe it's here, maybe it's over there. And you know what I say to that? If tattoos are your thing, that is a great tattoo to have. A great one. Justification is race blind, color blind, sex blind. There isn't a male gospel and a female gospel. It's not like, hey, you dudes are just so bad, you're going to have to take like the long, hard route to justification. Ladies, you got a shortcut. This is not chutes and ladders. One gospel, one path, one Christ, one cross, one confession, one baptism, one family of God. But is there distinction in the gospel? In our living out of the gospel, our adorning of the gospel, our event advancing of the gospel. Yes, there is unity in justification. There is diversity in sanctification. The Father does not justify us and then call us to bury our sexuality. He justifies us and then calls us to redeem it and to put it on blast, full and beautiful display in our marriages and in our churches. All right, same thing. There's 20 texts we could look at. Ephesians 5, 1 Peter 3, Titus 2, 1 Timothy 2. There's dozens. Let me just give you one. 1 Corinthians 11. Now, I know that we avoid that text like I avoided the tofu downstairs. I was on that other line over there. I'm not going near this text. Then we see the words head coverings and we totally put the Bible down and we walk away. But the big idea of that text is beautiful and so crucial for us. Paul argues there that life in the church, the sexual distinction cannot be, should not be muddied or buried or confused or marginalized or bypassed, but it should be embraced and displayed. He lands the plane with these words. He says, "So now judge for yourselves. Is it proper for a wife to pray to God with her head uncovered?" The answer, if you were dealing with this text, would be no. That would never be proper or fitting or right. We would be losing something crucial if she did that. Because in that day, that externality of wearing a head covering was how a woman shouted, "I am all in on the sex that God has assigned to me. And I am all in on displaying God's glory in my life and in this community." And a man not wearing one was his saying of the same. All right, now we have another Q&A coming so we can work on the externalities that fit our context. But the point is this. When outsiders walk into the life of your church, do they say, "Whoa, there is glory here. It is unmistakable. Men are men here, and women are women here, and nobody's bristling about it, and nobody's at each other's throats. There is no pecking order. Arms are not closed to one another. Arms are open to each other in love, and arms are locked in with each other on mission. There is equality, there is distinction, and there is glory." That's theological vision, and now Patty's going to talk you with, what does that feel like if it was actually happening?